You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Inside the War Room, presented by Sports Illustrated on the NFL Draft Bible Network. I am your host, Tyler. Joined by my two guys, as always, Dante, Saray. How you boys doing today?
Doing pretty good. We got a fun show, tight end rankings, and a huge trade. One of our teams really shook up the NFL draft this week, man. It was a good time. So can't wait to talk about that as well.
Yeah, we got an emergency type podcast, but we're going to talk about our scheduled topic, and that's going to talk about the tight ends in this upcoming draft class. But like I said, we canceled our mock that we were going to do, and we said we're going to talk about this emergency stuff because right now that's what's important about the NFL draft, and they really shaked up the draft, these teams, so these three teams that we'll get into. But let's get right into it. Let's do the tight ends first. So if you guys have been following along, we've been doing every position so far on the offense. We've done the quarterbacks, we've done the running backs, and we've done the receivers. And now we're at the tight end position, and we're about a month away from the NFL draft. So it's time to do some tight ends. So I'm going to start off with tight end one. I think this one's very easy, and I think it's going to be a clean slate all the way through. I'll start off with Saray, though. Who's your tight end one? Just maybe shake it up.
Kyle Pitts, man, Florida. Dude, he's an anomaly, man. I'm not. We were talking off air, like, the whole pro day thing this year is really sketch because, you know, everybody's running a sub 4.4. But he was, you know, came in at a 4.4, man, during his, you know, his warming up and, you know, getting that ready for his pro day, whatever. But, dude, he's just a different breed, man. I really love the Darren Waller comp, right? I think that's who he is. And a lot of people keep calling him wide receiver, and I really don't understand it, because if you're calling him a wide receiver, I kind of think you're taking away his value and his usage as a prospect. And I forgot what podcast I was listening to, and I can't remember. Excuse me if the numbers aren't correct, but I was they were talking about Darren Waller and Travis Kelce, and just talking about, like, how I want to say, like, Waller may have taken like 60% of his snaps out wide, and like the other 40 were in line, and Travis Kelce took like 50-something in line or 50-something out. It was just going to show how versatile the tight ends are. And Pitts is that same type of player where, just because he's such a good route runner and he's such a nightmare matchup for, like, safeties, linebackers, or corners, doesn't mean he's a wide receiver. Having him, you know, have the ability to line up everywhere is what makes him such a great prospect, which is why he's obviously tight end one for everybody, which is why he won the Biletnikoff as a tight end. Like, he's just a different breed, so we can keep it short and sweet. Kyle Pitts is a tight end one.
Yeah, I figured that would be – Dante, I'm assuming Kyle Pitts is your tight end one. I mean,
yeah, this is a clean sweep. We can, yeah. Sorry, I did a good job. I mean, he's just, he's a different breed, man. I just, insane athletic ability for a tight end. Really, really impressive.
I know. I've heard some people go out on a limb and say, like, I think he's like the second or third best prospect in this whole NFL draft. I mean, you know, obviously not factoring the quarterback needs and stuff.
He's my fifth best prospect on my board because I don't factor positional value.
That's what I'm saying. Just not factoring positional value. A lot of people have Kyle Pitts at least in their top three, and like you said, top five. So a lot of people are very
number two for me, for being honest.
Whoa. Ooh,
so okay. After Trevor Lawrence, I'm assuming, right?
I see. Dude, I would like to take everyone back to the summer real quick when Saray did not have Kyle Pitts tight end one. Coming into the year.
I did not.
I would just like to remind everyone of this. That this
you're
is
right.
A real
I did
thing
not.
That happened. But no,
this props, did happen.
Props to having him as your number two overall player. That's ballsy. I love that.
He's good, man. I love him.
No, he's a fine player. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up going in the draft. And, you know, maybe a team takes him just because, even if it's not the biggest need, but he's just a different kind of prospect. But, all right, clean sweep number one, Kyle Pitts. I thought this would be a clean sweep for number two, but then I remember that we have a Miami Canes fan in the same pocket. So I'm assuming that it's not going to be the same. We'll see. But I'm going to say Pat Freiermuth is my tight end too. I mean, Pat Freiermuth, it kind of just offers me, you know, your traditional tight end, a good blocker. He can go out to catch some balls for your, you know, quarterback. I mean, he's like, this comp is baby Gronk. I mean, is he Gronk? No, but that's what they call him. They call him baby Gronkowski. He's got like the same build for him, the same build as Gronkowski. And this is just your traditional tight end. I mean, in most, you know, I think years, you could be looking at Pat Freiermuth maybe as potentially tight end one. But when you got Kyle Pitts in this draft, it's going to make it very difficult, you know, to, you know, outbeat him to be tight end one. But very good prospect. This is a, you know, if you need a tight end, this is a luxury pick. I think if you're a good team, this is someone you want in your offense. I think anybody could use a Pat Freiermuth and they'll be completely fine with. I think you could even, you know, we've talked about this before, double down, go the Chiefs route, you know, let's get Kelce and Freiermuth. That would be a lot of fun. That's like kind of bringing back the old days of the New England Patriots with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. A little different, you know, play styles, obviously. But, I mean, I think that'd be, you know, really fun. And I think tight ends are still very valuable in the league, obviously. And someone's going to really value this guy. And I think he's going to go pretty early in this draft. And like I said, if there weren't for Kyle Pitts, I think this guy could be easily a tight end one. And it was Saray's tight end one in the summertime. And there's a reason. He's a very good prospect. So, I mean, I think teams will fall in love with this guy. And if you're not already in love with him. So Pat Freiermuth for me is tight end number two. I'm going to kick it off to Dante. Who's your tight end two?
Yeah, my tight end two is also Pat Freiermuth from Penn State. I think, you know, Tyler, you did a really good job kind of summarizing what he brings to the table. I think a lot of people just kind of forgot about him because he didn't really play this year. He, you know, he's had shoulder surgery right now, so he didn't run or do any drills at Penn State's pro day. So we haven't seen him in a bit. But the last time he was on the field, I mean, I think the dude, honestly, I think there was a fair argument over the summer who was tight end one. And now Kyle Pitts just kind of pulled away. I don't think it would have mattered if Freiermuth played or not. But Freiermuth was incredibly, incredibly good in 2019. This is a player that you can line up at all three traditional tight end spots, slot, outside, in line. You could probably get him an H-back if you wanted to. Incredibly versatile. He's a solid blocker. I don't know if he's like a plus blocker, but I think he's fine, especially given what we see from college tight ends in the context of that. You know, a lot of college tight ends these days, I mean, they don't even bother. Like, they're not even like trying to block people, man. They're just out here trying to catch passes, which is fine. I mean, I'll be honest, I prefer that. But, you know, Freiermuth does give you a little bit more of that inline ability with his size and his willingness. I thought he was very good out there. I think one of the underrated parts about his game, he's a very good route runner, a very diverse tree. You know, he was beating Pete Werner on the outside in 1v1s. I mean, he took Pete Werner to task in 2019, and Werner improved a ton in 2020. We might talk about him in a couple weeks when we do linebackers. But, you know, Freiermuth really took him to task. He had a couple really nice plays from the slot against Michigan. He caught a nice touchdown on a fade. Just a really good route runner, diverse tree, good hands, good size. You know, he's really solid. I just think you get a very, very good football player. Tight end projection in the NFL is incredibly difficult. It's a position that is like really, really hard. It usually takes guys a couple of years to like really get into it. And we kind of see that almost every year, even with the better players, you know, like Hockenson and Fant, you know, two of the highest graded tight ends I've ever done. I mean, they've had, you know, some their moments, but for the most part, that seems like they're still developing. Tight end's incredibly difficult, but I think Freiermuth can come in. You know, you look at teams like Jacksonville in the second half of the first round, or maybe with their second round pick. You know, I'd like to see him in Arizona as well. I think that would be incredibly fun. So I think there's some good teams there at the back end of the first round. Obviously, we would have said the Patriots before they spent like a gajillion dollars on tight ends and free agency. So I think there's a lot of good spots for Freiermuth. I'm assuming he'll be a top 50 pick. I think he's definitely a top 30 player in this class for me. Very, very talented, very, very solid. But I think Saray has a different tight end too. If I recall.
Well, since you're just going to put me on the spot, Brevin Jordan is my tight end too. And seriously, no Homer stuff aside, I just think Freiermuth is a better route runner than Jordan. I'll give you that. But, dude, Brevin Jordan's a great athlete, man. Great yak ability. That's something I think he's better than Freiermuth. Dude, I think that something worth noting is that Brevin dealt with such bad quarterback play for a while. He had one good season with Derek King, and that factored a lot. Also, I mean, even in this year.
Hold on. Who was the quarterback at Penn State?
Man, listen, I get it. I get it.
You'd rather have Clifford or De'Ara King?
But let me finish. This year alone, right, he had a year of Derek. Prior to that, man, we just had just quarterbacks come in and out like it was nothing. We couldn't depend on a guy at all. And Brevin was kind of just forgot about in the offense. I'd have to look at the numbers, but I really wonder if Pat got more targets than Brevin did. It would not surprise me if he did. And it's just even in this year, last year, they do like the offense is better when Brevin touches the football. And there's just times when he's just forgot about. I think he's a better blocker than people give him credit for. The technique is not consistently there, dude, but like the competitiveness is there. They're asking to chip DNs. They're asking him to block linebackers. I think he did a good job of that in terms of showing the will and the wanted to block. His yak ability is amazing, dude. And people always harp, you know, oh, you know, he's not a great blocker. Well, if he goes to a team, don't ask him to block. Same thing with Freiermuth. I'm just going to spoil it. Freiermuth is my tight end three. I'll just spill that out now. But I think Freiermuth is a receiving tight end first. I don't think he's a great blocker. I think the potential for him to be a great blocker is there. He showed the willingness to want to block. But it's like asking Travis Kelce or Dalen Waddle to block 90% of the time. For what? If we are predominantly good at having the football in our hands or creating space, working the seam, that's what we're going to ask you to do. Now, if it's third and one, third and two, we want to run up your alley, then all means I need you to be a competitive guy. Go block a DN or help chip somebody, sure. But we're going to ask you to do what you're great at, and that's just get the football in his hands. He's going to run away from linebackers. Again, he's not the route runner Freiermuth is, but overall, dude, he's just a great athlete. And I think the way the NFL is going now, man, I think you need guys who can, you know, line up all over the field, which is something Miami had him do. He literally lined up in the backfield, in line, H. He did everything, man. And the offense he played, it didn't ask him to run a diverse, you know, route tree, so there's room for improvement there. But I think this is all stuff you can work on if you're Brevin Jordan. So that's my tight end two. You guys did a good job breaking down Freiermuth, so I already told you how I feel about him. But he's also my tight end three, so I'll give it back to you guys.
Does it scare you by any chance by seeing, you know, the league is going towards the way of, you know, drafting more athletic tight ends, guys that are more like the receiver-esque guys, like your Eric Ebrons, your Evan Engram type, Irv Smith, if most recently I could think of, even Noah Fant to a certain degree. Do they concern you at all? Because, I mean, they're fine players, but we've seen more elite production from the more traditional tight ends. Like, I think TJ Hockenson has translated to the game really well. I mean, he was a Pro Bowler this year. Obviously, your Travis Kelce's are not going anywhere. Your Darren Waller, like you mentioned. I mean, these are bigger bodies, and I think that's why it's a little, you know, you can't compare Brevin Jordan to these guys because he's a little smaller, not as much of a blocker as those guys. So does it concern you by any means, you know, that these receivers, tight ends are not translating to the game as well?
I wouldn't say the receivers / tight ends aren't translating well. I would just say that, I guess the best case, you know, like the example we could use is like Evan Engram, right? Like tight end, I guess, and just blocking overall is just not his thing at all, right? Like Eric Ebron's a good example. He can't catch a football to save his life. Right. So I think those are issues that don't really value that aren't blocking. Right. I mean, well, Engram. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think that Jordan showed enough competitive, you know, in the will to want to go out there and block. And if you turn on the film, dude, they asked him to do a lot of stuff blocking. Like I forgot who put out a tweet and it put in an example. But there's some really good examples out there of Jordan, you know, actually blocking, man. The Wallers and the Kelce's are such anomalies because they're their route running ability is nuts. So, like, it's hard to try to base any tight end, maybe except for Kyle Pitts, against those guys because they run routes like wide receivers, dude. And that's not Brevin. He's not running routes like a wide receiver. But if he gets into a system where he's used correctly, just get athletes in space, which I think now innovative play callers are the new thing in the NFL. Everybody wants the next Sean McVay. Everybody wants the next young and innovative play caller. So I think that if he lands on the right opportunity, like, the sky is the limit for him just because if he's used correctly – you know, which may be scary to your point, right? If he's not used correctly, maybe he's a bust. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's that. But I don't know, man. I just don't know. I think he's better blocker than people give him credit for, in my honest opinion.
Fair enough. Okay. Oh, and speaking about Ebron not catching passes, I obviously know about that, being a Lions fan, and we ran him out of town. So, yes. All right. I'm going to kick it off to Dante. Tight end three. Who is tight end three for you?
Yeah, my tight end three is Notre Dame tight end Tommy Tremble. I think you get a player in Tremble who is a lot of projection. And that is just because, frankly, he just didn't really get to play a ton. Notre Dame has a freshman tight end, Michael Mayer, who is, I mean, just bonkers. He's in next year's draft class, I believe. He's going to be nuts. Just an absolutely phenomenal football player. So he stole a lot of reps from Tommy Tremble this year. But the reps that Tommy Tremble did get on the field, frankly, I think he's one of the more well-rounded tight ends that we have in this class. I think he brings some blocking to the table. He was able to put some guys in the dirt. He's a good drive blocker with decent functional strength. He made some good blitz pickups and pass protection as well. And I think he's a much better athlete than given credit for. He runs really well. He has good speed. He's quick in and out of breaks. I think he's a solid route runner despite a limited tree. I think he's got really good yak ability as well. I mean, I saw him, you know, dicing up the Clemson secondary in the ACC championship. You know, he really brings a lot to the table. Now, the problem with Tremble is you just don't have a lot of reps. The sample size of all of his good stuff is very, very small, and that does make things scary. And I'll be honest, like, I don't really like this tight end class. Like, there's two players at the top that I feel good about, Freiermuth and Pitts. The rest of these dudes, like, honestly, just not for me. But I think Tremble is my tight end three just because I think that there's a higher ceiling that he possesses that some of the other guys don't. I think you can really develop him into a player that can be on the field for like 95% of the snaps. Now, is that going to take a couple of years? Is that going to be year one? Definitely not. There's just not a big enough sample size, but the blocking's there, the route running's there, the pass catching ability's there, the athleticism's there, everything you could possibly ask for from a tools perspective is there. And the reason I feel comfortable betting on a guy like Tremble is because what I mentioned earlier, right? Like, tight end is a position that just naturally, like, whether these guys are really, really good or not, it takes a couple of years to get up to speed usually, right? Like, the exceptions to the rule, we have them, but usually it takes a couple of years to get up to speed. I mean, even Travis Kelce, you know, it even took him a couple of years before he became, you know, probably the best offensive player in the NFL, for being honest. Should have won offensive player of the year this year. So I think that I'm willing to bet on a guy like Tremble, a guy that I think has really, really good tools and good blocking ability, good receiving ability, well-rounded. The sample size is just small, but I can expand that. I can develop him over the course of a, you know, a rookie contract. Not a player I'm drafting in the top 50, probably not a player I'm drafting in the top 70. He's more closer to like third, fourth round for me. But in a tight end class that I don't think is very good, I'd rather take a swing on Tommy Tremble than take some of these other players. So that's why he's my tight end three.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm kind of in the same boat with you where I'm not as high on this tight end class outside of the top two, outside of Pitts and Freiermuth. And I think after that, it's just like you're getting maybe a fringe tight end one or a guy who will be a nice tight end two, like a nice compliment to somebody. I think after that, I don't think there's a true tight end one outside of Freiermuth and Pitts. So my tight end three is kind of the same boat, different guy. I'm going Hunter Long from Boston College. I think Hunter Long is one of those guys is, you know, he's a bigger guy, bigger, you know, frame. I believe he's 6'5". He's more of your traditional tight end, but obviously a very good route runner as well. You know, he's a guy where I think if you complement him with another nice tight end, I think you could be, you know, playing with something, playing some nice magic right there. I think he'll be a really good tight end too in the league. Just a very nice compliment piece for whatever team you're looking for. Like, I think any team could use a Hunter Long and he'd be a nice compliment piece. Same boat. I wouldn't necessarily take him the top 50. I'd probably wait to maybe later day two, maybe even early day three for a guy like this. But overall, I mean, this is a guy that's going to be productive in your offense. It's the guy you're going to feature in your offense, especially if you run the 12 personnel. So I think teams like, you know, let's say Daryl Bevel, obviously when he was in Detroit, he loves the 12 personnel. So I could see, you know, maybe Jacksonville swing, you know, the fences for a guy like this, you know, pair him up with another tight end. I think he could be, you know, a really nice compliment. They don't necessarily have a guy down there right now to compliment him with, but I think if they could address that down the line and get Hunter Long to compliment with him, I think that could be really nice. And I think any team that just really likes the 12 personnel is going to really value a guy like this. Tennessee obviously just lost Jonnu Smith. You know, if you can get a true tight end one, which they don't really have on their roster either right now, I think Hunter Long could be a nice compliment also to their team. So Hunter Long is tight end three for me. Saray said Pat Freiermuth is tight end three for him. We're going to kick it off to tight end four. I'm going to kick it off to Saray. Who's your tight end four?
Well, tight end four, you just broke him down, Hunter Long, so I'll keep this one pretty quick. Dude, I think he's a solid route runner. I think there's occasion that he can round his breaks at the top of his route, but he also had success stacking guys in coverage. He's not going to be a vertical threat in the NFL. That's not what he's going to be. I mean, like, if you look at his, you know, yards per catch, I think that a lot of it's kind of inflated just because the way he was as far as, you know, running after the catch, right? But he's a good prospect. A lot of people have him comp to Hunter Henry. I kind of like that comp, right? I don't know if Hunter Long ever becomes like a true tight end one, like you said, but a complimentary piece, or even a guy who can, you know, come in and just have some. If he came in year one and he had like 30, 40 catches for like 500 something yards, it wouldn't surprise me, right? Depending on where he lands, depending on the usage rate. He's a good prospect, man. This class, tight end class, isn't great, right? I love the top three guys for me: Pitts, Freiermuth, and Brevin. And after that, it's just kind of who you prefer, what kind of style you are, and you know what do you look for in tight ends. But Hunter Long's good, man. A lot of people have him ranked higher, you know, than Brevin. I've seen Hunter Long as tight end two for a lot of people, right? So it's just literally what you prefer. Hunter Long tight end four for me. I don't know what the way the game is going. I don't know how valuable a tight end who's not really a vertical threat will be in the NFL, because everything is such pace and space. And a lot of tight ends these days are lining up out wide. They're working the seams. And I think the potential for Hunter to do that is there, but like, he's not going to consistently run away from coverage, you know, in today's NFL. I just don't think that's him. I think he's a solid blocker. I think potential's there to be even a better blocker, but he was comfortable in one-on-one situation. There was pass protection, where there was run blocking. So Hunter Long is tight end four for me.
Okay. Fair enough. I'll do it quickly for me. Brevin Jordan's my tight end four. I thought you guys broke him down really phenomenally. You know, maybe a little different view than Saray. I don't think he's necessarily a tight end one ever in the NFL. I think he's kind of almost like a Hunter Long, just a nice compliment piece. You know, I think you pair him up with somebody, I think he could be a nice addition. I think, like Hunter Long was Saray saying, and what I was saying, he could be a fringe tight end one maybe for a couple games or even for a season if you're still looking for your true tight end one. I think that's Brevin Jordan. You know, he's one of those more athletic guys, like I said. You know, he's your Irv Smiths, your Evan Ingrams, your Eric Ebrons, but, you know, maybe he could catch the ball a little better. We'll see when it comes to the league. Obviously going to have, you know, better quarterback play. And, you know, if you get a guy like Stafford, he's going to be throwing 100-mile-per-hour fastballs to you. So you got to be able to catch those. Trey Lance got a fastball himself as well. So, you know, I think Brevin's a good prospect. Not necessarily someone I love, but I think he'll be a nice compliment to, you know, a true tight end one. So Brevin Jordan for me, not a top 50 player again, and probably, you know, another guy that's going to be, you know, later on day two and maybe even early on day three for me. So Dante, who's your tight end for?
Yeah, my tight end four is Hunter Long. You guys did a good job breaking him down, so I'll be brief. I don't really like player comps. I don't make them too often. I comped him to Kyle Rudolph. That's the player that I see when I watch him on film. Just this big, nuanced route runner, solid blocker. He's going to be a red zone threat. Nice frame, long arms, good catch radius, very physical. He reminds me a lot of Kyle Rudolph with the Vikings. And I think Long is probably one of the better blockers that we have in this tight end class, just because of his size. I mean, you know, a lot of the other guys are just kind of slight, you know, light in the pants, and Long's a big dude, and that benefits him as a blocker. So I really like Hunter Long, and he's one of the nice things about him is that, like, you know, we didn't have a huge sample size from Freiermuth because he didn't really play this year. Pitts, obviously, we have a great sample size. Tremble, small sample size, a lot of sample size with Hunter Long. Dude led Boston College in targets. He was wide receiver one for them this year, essentially. So it was nice to actually, like, get to watch a tight end and, like, see an influx of targets and that stuff. So I'll pivot to my tight end five here because you guys have both talked about it. My tight end five is Brevin Jordan. And I'll kind of defend why I have him here. He's not that far off from Hunter Long. He's really not that far off from Tommy Tremble. For me, it really just came down to, like, Brevin Jordan's a good yak player. He's very, very good with the ball in his hands. He's a good athlete. That's cool. I don't think he's a good route runner. I don't think he's a good blocker. And I don't think he catches well through contact. And those are three things for me as a tight, like, scouting tight ends that I care about. And I think Hunter Long and Tommy Tremble are better at all three of those things compared to Brevin Jordan. And that worries me. And I think Brevin's ceiling is, again, I don't love player comps, but this is another one that I'm going to run with this year, is Jonnu Smith, right? Like, that's his ceiling. That's the, you know, the perfect role for Jordan, right? Everything that you saw Jonnu do in Tennessee, that's the only way, in my opinion, that Brevin Jordan's going to be a featured piece of an offense in the NFL. And that's a lot of ifs, right? Because nobody uses the tight end position like the Titans used Jonnu Smith last season. And Arthur Smith is gone. I don't know if they're going to do that again this year. He's the head coach in Atlanta now. So now I'm down to, like, one team that I know for sure will use Brevin Jordan correctly, right? Like, Brevin Jordan, I don't even think would be good in the Travis Kelce role, right? Like, I want to get him the ball behind the line of scrimmage, not so much past it, because I think he struggles as a route runner. I don't know. Like, he'll naturally separate if you get him a good matchup, sure. But, you know, the league is trending towards having players who are slot, you know, hybrid safeties who can cover these guys, right? Like, that's where the defenses are trying to go. And not every team has them, right? There's going to be games where Brevin Jordan's going to get out there and, you know, the Eagles are going to roll out Nate Gary in the slot or something, and he's just going to cook them for four quarters.
Hey, he's a Niner now. He just signed today.
Okay, great. Great. The Niners, you know, right. There's going to be games like that, right, where teams don't have that hybrid player to cover Brevin Jordan, and that's fine. I'm just worried about him going to a team that's going to be like, okay, you're going to put your hand in the dirt for 60% of your snaps, and you're going to block, and we're going to use you occasionally on play actions. Like, dude, you are just wasting talent. Like, you really are. And that worries me about Brevin, is that, like, and again, another player, Saray mentioned it earlier, right? The sample size with Jordan is so small. I mean, you get to the 2019 film, right? Dude's just, Miami can't get him the damn football. He's going like one catch games against Pitt, you know, like stuff like that. It worries me. They did a little bit of a better job this year, but even at times this year, he just vanishes from the game plan. And I don't know if that's him or King or Miami or what it was, but like Jordan's film honestly just scared me, right? Like, that for me personally, it was just like one red flag after another. I don't mean that literally, like injuries and character concerns. I just mean, like, you know, things that concern me. So that's why I have Brevin Jordan at tight end five. I think he's fine. If he goes to the right team, he's going to boom and I'm going to look like a freaking idiot, and I'm okay with that. But like that, you know, he worries me. I just think his projection is so murky going to the NFL, and I don't know. I'm not as high on Saray as that potential.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to kick it off to Saray. Who is your tight end five to wrap this up?
Tommy Trimble. Catching a lot of, you know, love lately, man. It's kind of like this thing happens every year where there's a kind of a guy who kind of just comes out of nowhere and just, you know, just for some reason, it's just whether it's the media or it's in a full team, just, you know, just getting love. And that's what Tommy Trimble has been. I think you got to clean up the drops, right? I think that's something that happens on film a lot. Everything with him is just projection, and that's what worries me, because there's like the sample size, just like he talked about with Brevin, dude. You sat behind dudes at Notre Dame for a while, and even when you were there, even this past season, it's just he didn't get enough targets, man. He didn't get enough attention just as a weapon on the offense. I think the potential is there for him to be fantastic, right? I don't think he's going to play with his hand in the dirt in NFL. I don't think that's what he's going to be. I don't think he's the type of tight end to do that. But, man, he's good athlete, good speed, but everything's projection with him, and I don't know where a team's going to value that. You know what I mean? For a guy who rarely seen the football, where the production's not great, and it's not his fault the production's not great. It's just the offense he played in, and just other guys were getting the ball, man. Same thing with Brevin Jordan. There's not much you could do with situations like that. So I like Trimble a lot. It's just, again, it's literally just projection. So it's, if some team, like Dante said earlier, man, you've got to be willing to take a chance on a kid. Where I think what's important is, if you're a win now team, right, maybe you take a guy like Tommy Trimble, because you don't have to play him right away. Maybe there's already, like the Chiefs were a good example, you have a tight end one already, right? This is a guy who can come in and maybe, you know, make an impact on special teams maybe the first two seasons and kind of work his way into the rotation somewhere like that. But I don't expect him to be like Jacksonville, who Meyer has talked about a lot about, you know, upgrading the tight end position, who I would not be surprised if they spent a first-round pick on Pratt firing. I really think that's a possibility. But just a team where you need a tight end one, I don't think this is here. I think this is a project, and I think the potential to be good is through the roof. But I think this is, he has to land in a situation where he can sit and learn and improve. And if that happens, man, I think, like, don't be surprised if it's like year three, year four, and we're talking about Tommy Trimble as like a Pro Bowl caliber player. Like, it wouldn't be surprising, because like all the potential and the tools are there, but just didn't get enough, you know, work in Notre Dame. So Tommy Trimble was my tight end five.
I'm going to agree with you there on tight end five, Tommy Trimble as well. And that kind of just goes on to say that there's not really another guy that really competes for that spot, honestly. And kind of like what you said, you're just betting on the upside at this point. It's like, what are you going to be able to get out of him? Where this guy could be he could be out of the league in a couple of years, or he could be, like you said, if he develops nicely with the tools he has, he could be a very good tight end, just depending on the situation he goes into. This is a guy that's definitely going to probably go, I would have to assume, day three, and maybe even mid through day three, like round five, round six potentially. And it's just going to be a team betting on the upside. And that's what you do usually around those rounds, is you're not really found with the talent or you haven't really seen much of him, and that's what you're drafting, you know, when you get to those rounds, 5, 6, 7, you're drafting on the upside. Undrafted guys, you're betting on the upside, obviously, and you just want them in your building and see how you work with them. I think that's exactly what Tommy Tremble is. It's like you said, it's just a guy you want in your building and you see if you can develop him, but it's not a guy that you're going to necessarily reach for and go on an early and draft him. So, you know, it's going to be interesting where he ends up landing. I mean, I don't see a situation where he's ever a tight end one, you know, year one. It's going to definitely come to a situation where, you know, he just hasn't had much experience and he's going to have to sit a year behind and maybe, you know, make a couple catches a year, you know, if the ball's thrown to him, you know, that's like the role he's going to have. You know, he might be a tight end three, you know, coming into his rookie year, and then maybe slowly but surely he could work up to a role where he can, you know, potentially be a tight end two. I just never see the potential of maybe being a tight end one, but maybe it's there. But I think it's definitely going to be, you know, a slow paced grind with Tommy Tremble. It's just someone you're going to have to definitely develop. And, you know, I think it doesn't really necessarily matter if you're a win now team or if you're a team that's rebuilding, because if you're drafting this guy in day three, I mean, you know, you're going to develop him regardless. So, you don't have to force him into a situation where he's ever the number one option or maybe even the number two option. So this is definitely a day three guy, developmental guy, like I said. So I'm going to go Tommy Tremble, tight end five for me. And with that being said, that is a wrap to our tight end class. So, you know, we all have the same five guys, just in different orders and, you know, different ways of liking them. But overall, good talk, boys. And now we got some breaking news to talk about that happened on Friday evening. I mean, just a regular Friday, 1 o'clock, as Zach Wilson's pro day is going on. NFL Network is getting all these trade rumors coming in. You know, everyone in draft, the draft media, the draft Twitter, whatever, they're all expecting just to watch Zach Wilson's pro day. And he was phenomenal in his pro day, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Maybe it leads up to something we're talking about, but I don't think it will be. The San Francisco 49ers, the Miami Dolphins, the Philadelphia Eagles shaked up the whole draft within, what, 20, 30 minutes? I mean, it was
like
insane.
20 minutes, because the first trade came in. I started writing an article. I got halfway done, and then the other trade came in, and I had to delete it and start over, and I was very upset. So,
but maybe you were not upset when you saw what you got in return, because you are a Dolphins fan, so we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the first trade, though. So the San Francisco 49ers, the Miami Dolphins make a significant trade. So the Niners were originally picking at pick number 12, and the Miami Dolphins were at pick number 3. Courteous to the Houston Texans trade with Laremy Tunsil back in the day, which is insane to me. That we'll probably get into later on, that Laremy Tunsil ended up getting the Miami Dolphins 4 first-round picks. And I mean 4 first-round picks. That is insane. And that was the guy that fell to them for putting a gas mask on. I mean, could you imagine if Laremy Tunsil never put the gas mask on?
Yeah, I mean, the real MVP is the guy who hacked Laremy Tunsil's phone.
For you guys,
released,
yes.
That video. Yes, for the Dolphins. That man deserves a statue outside of Dolphin Stadium, man. Just an absolute goat. Just goated us into 4 first-round picks.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
And but so grateful. Just
so to break it down real quick, the San Francisco 49ers obviously had to trade a haul to move up from pick 12 to pick number 3. And that's obviously, I think we're going to get into that, they'll probably be addressing the quarterback position at that spot. But the Dolphins, or the San Francisco 49ers, traded obviously pick number 12 and then 2 future first-round picks. And I believe this year's 3rd-round pick, which was the comp pick from Robert Saleh leaving.
Next year's third
for comp, right? From Robert Saleh.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes. Okay.
So 2 first-round picks, obviously pick 12, and then the 3rd-round pick from next year. So that's what the Miami Dolphins got in return for pick number 3. I'm going to kick it off to the Miami Dolphins fan, Dante. What's your thoughts on this? You know, moving down to 12 from 3.
I mean, I was super happy about it. And obviously there's an adjacent move that we have to talk about next, but like the original trade, when it came through, I mean, I was over the moon about it. I mean, it's 3 first-round picks and a 3rd to move back 9 spots in a class where we're not going to draft a quarterback. Right. So, I was totally happy with it. I think that's fantastic, fantastic value. And it gave us, you know, obviously it's hard to talk about these trades without mentioning the other one from the Dolphins perspective, because the reason we made the second trade, to move back up to 6 with the Eagles is because we had the flexibility of having those extra picks that we acquired from the 49ers. So, I mean, we had that flexibility. We had 2 first-round picks next year. And we were able to mortgage one of them to get back up to 6 with the Eagles. So I was super happy with the Dolphins. Basically, at the end of the day, you know, they end up moving back from 3 to 6 and gaining a future first and a future third. That's not bad. Yeah, I'll take it. And I think it keeps them, and getting back up to 6, I think, is really what's important. Because when they drop down to 12, you're kind of like, all right, you know, they might be able to get like the last of the skill position players, whoever makes it out of, you know, the top 10, they'll probably be able to snag, whether that's Smith, Waddle, Pitts, probably not Chase, but maybe Chase, right? If they make it out there, you know, back to 12, you know, so you're kind of looking at players like maybe Quiddy Pay or Rashawn Slater at that pick. Getting back up to 6 with the Eagles, I think, is important, because now, I mean, you have to think, I think 4 quarterbacks are going to come off the board in the top 4 picks. I think Atlanta either takes one or trades that pick. And then you have the Bengals at 5. I think they're going to draft Penei Sewell. So that leaves the Dolphins at 6 with the pick of the litter of their positional value, right? Like, so they can get Waddle, they can get Smith, they can get Chase, they can get Pitts if that's who they want to draft there at 6. So for me, these two trades work really well in tandem together. But also, I would have been fine if the Dolphins had stayed at 12. Like, that would not have bothered me. That was great value for a trade back. Anytime you get 3 first-round picks to trade back like that, sign me up. Plus, we get an extra third. Yeah, great. So I'm really happy from the Dolphins' perspective. I think the more interesting thing to talk about are the other two teams, but I'll kick it to you guys to do that.
Okay. I want to talk about something from the San Francisco's perspective. And I called this January 3rd, and obviously it hasn't happened yet, but I said I'm calling my shot now. I said Justin Fields or Trey Lance will be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL with the San Francisco-type offense, so a San Francisco-built offense. And I think this is clear as day to me that the San Francisco 49ers are drafting Trey Lance to me. And you're probably wondering, you know, why not Justin Fields? I don't think you make this trade this early on without seeing Justin Fields' pro day. Because you got to remember, we already saw Trey Lance's pro day. We saw Zach Wilson's pro day as it was going on. And the Niners make that move. We've seen Mac Jones's pro day. Take that out. We're not taking him at 3. And I think that's crazy talk when people are bringing up the scenario of Mac Jones going pick number 3 to the San Francisco 49ers. And that is just tomfoolery at its greatest. So I think it's clear as day this is a Trey Lance situation. The way that they're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo still being the guy, I think it has some truth to it. And he's not necessarily the long-term guy, but I think he's the guy going into 2021 where you could have a guy like Trey Lance sit behind for Garoppolo for maybe a half year if you can maybe find a trade partner for Garoppolo, or if Garoppolo gets hurt, Trey Lance gets to step in, because obviously Garoppolo's had the injury history. And if, you know, if you even want to roll the whole year with Jimmy Garoppolo, you could do that and then have Trey Lance maybe even step in 2022. I think it's the perfect scenario for Trey Lance going to San Francisco, because him and the Kyle Shanahan offense, oh, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful in that Kyle Shanahan offense. I've loved that fit for so long. You know, being a Lions fan and knowing he was a potential, you know, target at pick number 7, I was all in for getting Robert Saleh in here. And then, you know, maybe we get a San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator from the Kyle Shanahan tree. And I was all in for this Trey Lance hype. I think it's clear as day that Trey Lance is the pick number 3. I mean, I just don't think the Niners make this big of a move before the draft this early on if you're not going to take Trey Lance. Because if you've seen Fields' pro day, maybe it could, you know, create some, you know, questioning. But I think it's clear as day. You got to go Trey Lance here. And I think it's a money move for the San Francisco 49ers, because you are now finding your franchise quarterback who's going to be phenomenal. I'm calling right now my quarterback 2. He's going to be great in this system. And I cannot wait to see him with Kyle Shanahan. I think, like I said, this is going to be a top 10 quarterback. I am so confident in this. I'm going bold here. And, you know, him, you know, grooming for maybe a half year or even a full year, I'm excited, and I'm glad this was the team that's going to land with Trey Lance, because I didn't think this was possible. Obviously, when they were at pick 12, now they're at pick number 3. They have all the leverage to take him, and I'm excited. So I'm going to kick it off to Saray. You can speak from the Dolphins or the Niners perspective, either one.
My man Chris Greer is out here willing and dealing, baby. You love to see it. I just, dude, it's just crazy to me, man. Just my own personal thought. But I think Miami is still loading up to make a run at Watson. I think these picks are piling up in the future. I think this is really something that Miami is planning to do. I still think that they're fine. Look, we're going to grab weapons for Tua. We're going to build around Tua. Tua's going to go have a good year, better year next year, better offense, and the trade value for him is going to skyrocket when the stuff with Watson, whatever happens, we won't speak on that. But if that situation, whatever that may be, if that gets figured out, dude, and Tua has a good year, it's going to skyrocket. And Houston's going to sit there and be like, well, we got the future picks that Miami wants. I really think that's what's happening right here, in my honest opinion. But in terms of the 49ers, I seen Schefter make a tweet when this whole thing happened, and he's like, yeah, San Francisco didn't make a move with a quarterback in mind. I'm calling BS, okay? You don't trade up to number three to not have a quarterback in mind. Let's be honest. They can move on from Jimmy G 2021, and the dead cap hit's only $2.8 million. It's setting up for the perfect story. And there were reports from, like, a Patriots beat writer, and I cannot remember the gentleman's name. Apparently, the Patriots did make a call for Jimmy G before re-signing Cam Newton, and the 49ers said he's not available. It makes sense of why the 49ers didn't go trade for Stafford, why they didn't, you know, go the Andy Dalton or whatever other route they could have taken. It just makes more sense now because it was just an example. You guys can see the face Tyler was giving me. But just my point was that it just makes sense that they didn't go try to find another quarterback right now. But you trade up for Lance, we assume this is going to be, because there's significantly more plugged in people to the league than we are all talking about. This pick's going to be Lance. And to be clear, I think both quarterbacks' fields are Lance would be fantastic in this system, but I don't even think it has anything to do with the pro day. I just think that when Kyle Shanahan sees a guy or when John Lynch sees a guy, I just think they think this has been their guy all along. And you just, if you like him, you go get him. And I swing the bat, man. And this is what this is. They're calling their shots and I enjoy it. You talked about the injury history with Jimmy G, right? So who knows what happens next season, if he plays a full year or not. But even if he doesn't, it sets up perfectly for Trey Lance to have a successful career, because you can go out there with Jimmy G, who they just went to a Super Bowl with a few years ago, right? He goes out there, let's say he has a good year. You're letting him walk. Like, it doesn't matter how great Jimmy G plays next year, he's leaving. And it's okay. And I have a hard time seeing teams trade for a guy that, from that what we see, right, is just going to not be on the roster after the 2021 season. Why give up any capital for a guy like that? So, I don't know, man. I think Trey Lance is going to be amazing with this offense, the offensive line that they have, the running game. They finally are going to have a guy who can extend plays, who has the arm talent to make all the throws. You can take this offense to the next level. I know it's a ton of projection because we haven't seen him take, like, an NFL snap yet. But, dude, the sky is the limit. And if you're the Eagles, we'll go from that perspective also. There were rumors saying, or I think it was Rappaport saying that they wanted to trade up to number three for Zach Wilson, but just couldn't get it done. So we know off rip that the Eagles don't have faith in Jalen Hurts. They signed Flacco just, you know, to have a veteran presence. There's no way you go into the next season with just, you know, Hurts on the roster. You got to have some type of veteran presence there. And Flacco was a weird signing because when he was in Denver, he showed no will or want to, you know, help out Drew Lock. You know, he made it clear, I'm not here to help Drew Lock. He, same thing in Baltimore. This is not the type of guy that's supposed to be grooming young quarterbacks. So that move is a little weird to me. But Philly took themselves out of the quarterback market, probably because they only wanted Zach Wilson. I'm not sure. I don't know what the Eagles do as far as the draft now. There's so many holes in the roster they got to take care of, man. So there's that. The Dolphins, man, they're killing it. They're really just killing it. And I really think that the draft really starts at three now. I think I don't want to say it's a foregone conclusion, but from everything we've heard, it's Trevor Lawrence one and Zach Wilson two. So, and again, ton of projection, but it sounds like Trey Lance three. And the Falcons, if Denver wants a quarterback, you got to go trade up with Atlanta like now. There's no way Carolina. You sit at nine. Carolina, too. And I think
– buddy, Atlanta ain't sending that pick to Carolina.
Oh,
not in the division. NFC South, not in the division. Yeah.
No so way I think they Denver. Send that pick to Carolina, man. Yep.
I think Denver makes a call, and, hey, we need Justin Fields because the whole Watson situation we talked about is super murky, and Denver clearly doesn't have any faith in Drew Lock, and rightfully so. He's not good. So it's either Justin Fields or bust for Denver, right? You don't – they wanted Mitch Trubisky, but for whatever reason, Trubisky didn't want to go to Denver. He decided that Buffalo was a better fit for him. So I don't know what the Broncos got to make a move. You can't go into the season with just Drew Lock on your quarterback. So that's
Drew,
that.
I know Drew Lock could beat the Chargers for all I know, and he could do a little dance moves.
In the show. Oh my God, the disrespect is real around here. Jeez.
Speaking from the Dolphins' perspective a little back, this is a home run move for them because they were still able to trade back to pick number 12 with the Niners, and then they only gave up, what, one first-round pick, I believe, Dante? Was that right? To move up back to six?
We traded our first-round pick. So next year we only have the 49ers' first-round pick. So we traded ours to the Eagles to move back up to six.
Okay. So they traded one first-round pick to move up to six, and like Dante was saying, they now have all the luxury of taking – whatever they want, essentially, to, you know, be a luxury to Tua at this point, because, you know, now we're assuming that the top four picks could very possibly be quarterbacks, all quarterbacks. And then pick number five, is looking like it could be either Penei Sewell or Kyle Pitts for Cincinnati. And then after that, Miami has all the luxury of taking whatever they want. If they want Ja'Marr Chase, if they want Devontae Smith, if they want Jalen Waddle, they have all the luxury essentially to take whatever they want. And whatever Cincinnati doesn't do, you're going to have that player as well. So if that's Kyle Pitts or if that's Penei Sewell, you still have that luxury to take that player at pick number six, which is absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, the way they shaked up this draft to get a team that was not picking the top 10 to now picking the top three and get another quarterback off the board, which, you know, led them to, you know, get one of their still favorite players at pick number six is absolutely unbelievable, and still ended up getting two first round picks at the end of the day out of it. So, you know, Miami, A plus move for them, because like I said, they're still going to get a player they really like, and it's probably going to still be their number one or their number two option. And I don't think they'll be mad at their number two option, because their number two option is still going to be a very talented player at pick number six. So from the Dolphins' perspective, home run move. For the Niners' perspective, I love it as well, because now they're moving up from 12 to 3 to get their guy, and they're getting a guy that's going to fit their offense like a glove, and that's Trey Lance. So I cannot wait for that. And then from the Eagles' perspective, really quickly, you know, it's not a bad move. Obviously, like we've talked about them when we did our mock, when they were picking at number six, they have so many holes on this roster. So getting extra draft capital is not a bad move for them. And, you know, they're going to be one of the worst teams in football next year. I mean, I think they have the chance to be, you know, having a top five pick or a top 10 pick again in this upcoming, you know, 2022 draft. I know we're looking too far down the line, but, you know, I think getting extra draft capital when you're starting off this new rebuild, new head coach, I don't think it's a bad idea. So for the Eagles' perspective, gaining extra draft capital is never bad, and that's exactly what they're doing. So, you know, I give them kudos. Maybe they just didn't think there was a guy worth that number six that they, you know, really liked. And, you know, they obviously, with the Niners trading up to three, they probably thought they're out of the quarterback market regardless. They're like, let's trade back. Let's get extra capital. We'll go to 12. We'll get a guy we really like still, and we'll build off from there. And yeah. So I think all three teams benefit off this at the end of the day. And I think it's going to, you know, only time will tell how these guys pan out. You know, if Trey Lance sucks, then obviously it looks bad for the Niners. If, you know, whoever the Dolphins take at six and, you know, they mess up all these picks, then it sucks. But time will tell. But I think at the end of the day, looking at this current day, I think all three teams won this deal. And I think it's a win-win, you know, win-win-win for every team in this scenario. So kudos to all these three teams shaking up the board and making it very interesting, you know, a month before the draft.
Yeah, I'll kind of round it out here. I agree. I do think it'll be Lance at three. However, I'm not as like blindly confident as you guys are. I would not be surprised if that pick is Justin Fields. I think that there's a bit of a connection there with him and Shanahan, but there's also a connection with him and Lance. So, you know, kind of goes both ways. But I think either one would be absolutely fantastic. I do think it'll be Lance, though. If I had to bet, I think Lance will be the pick there. From the Eagles' perspective, I think, you know, I mean, look, like Saray said, right, they tried to get up to three, which is ironic because the Dolphins had the third overall pick, which means they called the Dolphins and the Dolphins said, nah, we're going to send it to San Francisco, but you want to, you know, move back to 12. Maybe we can do that, which, like, I just can't imagine having that conversation with another GM. Just be like, well, we're not going to trade you that pick, but I have this very odd counter offer for you. So I'm sure that was an interesting conversation between Chris Greer and Howie Roseman. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the Eagles really had a ton of faith in Jalen Hurts, but they figured, look, if we're not going to match the 49ers offer to get up to three, we might as well trade back and kick the ball to next year. And I don't want to get in too much to talking about 2022 quarterbacks because it's late and guys can develop in different things. I am not a fan of what I've seen out of the corner of my eye watching these 2022 guys. You know, watching the North Carolina receiver, Sam Howell is, I'm going to go with erratic, is the word I'm going to use. Spencer Rattler is fun, but also like not great at reading defenses and being consistent. And you can kind of just like go down the list. Desmond Ritter's like very inaccurate. Carson Strong is like interesting, but plays at Nevada.
Brock Purdy season, baby.
Oh dear Lord. All right. So so the Eagles are kicking the ball down the road and I get that. I think at 12, they could take a playmaker. They could be, you know, kind of in the position the Dolphins were in to take like the last of those top pass catchers to fall. If one of them does, I think they're going to draft a corner. That screamed like Eagles prototype scream J.C. Horn to me. That's what that pick screams. If he gets past Dallas at 10, like if Dallas goes with Sertan, That screams J.C. Horn to me. So we'll kind of wrap this up. We can actually finish on time for once. I think it's a good deal for the Eagles. If they weren't going to get up to three, you might as well trade back, kick the ball down the road. I love it for the 49ers. I'm incredibly, incredibly excited to see Kyle Shanahan with a quarterback that does not have a noodle arm. I think that'll be awesome. And then for the Dolphins, I think they put themselves in a really good spot and they still have good draft capital. I mean, they basically gave up nothing to move up six spots, essentially. I mean, yeah, they traded their own first round pick, but they have an extra one because they traded back to 12. So I think that's how it should be done. So like Tyler said, win, win, win.
All right, very quickly. And I just want to throw this out there real quickly, and it's going to be real quick. Number three, you know, obviously we said, Saray said it was the Ian Rapoport that's saying the Eagles would only trade up to three if they know Zach Wilson was going to be there. Do you think potentially the Eagles were waiting till draft day to see if the draft board would fall out like that? And maybe that's why they didn't want to pull the trigger on this day.
I'm going to say no, because I mean, maybe, but like, that would be dumb. You know what I mean? Cause like you just, if you want to move up, right? Like you can't risk that. I mean, cause if they were doing that, right, then that's the reason the 49ers sniped them for that pick.
No, that's why they were waiting. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think the Eagles minded giving up the assets necessarily for the quarterback. It's that they maybe didn't think the quarterback was going to be there and they won for the draft board to fall. That's like the only thing I could think of why the Eagles wouldn't match the offer, but you know, it's going to be interesting. And obviously it doesn't matter. It's too late now. They're at pick number 12 and San Fran's at pick number three. And honestly, I'm glad they're at pick number three, because this is a team I'd much rather see Trey Lance or Justin Fields on than the Philadelphia Eagles, honestly. So I'm completely fine with it. But with that being said, that is a wrap to this episode of Inside the War Room. Hope you guys all enjoyed this episode. And we're out, guys. Peace.